As you know, it's important to me that the supplements I recommend and use are of the highest quality. That's why I stock the Protocol for Life Balance product line at my online dispensary, drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research, including a suite of supplements for brain support, Brain Regain, Cogumin SLCP, and Magtine. This premium collection may support blood flow and neuronal membrane fluidity and facilitates intercellular communication. They may be advantageous for supporting healthy cognitive function and performance, mental acuity, learning, and memory, and may promote a relaxed mood. For more information and to order, just go to drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Protocol for Life Balance is an A-rated GMP manufacturer of premium dietary supplements. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly opportunity to field your questions. Questions come to us via questions@drhoffman.net. With me today, Layla Mudin, who is our nutritionist in residence, as usual. She co-hosts Q&A with Layla, appropriately enough, since her name is, after all, Layla. It's not just a song by Eric Clapton. Before we get to questions, you know, interesting thing happening is that there is a big boom in plastic surgery. And part of it, I think, is, you know, the people are ready to go back to the doctor again. They're ready to go back to, travel and so on and so on. And they're emerging from isolation. They also had maybe some more discretionary dollars because they couldn't spend money, you know, perhaps during the lockdown. And so
go to restaurants, couldn't travel.
Maybe some people got
Let's go get some plastic surgery.
Yeah, okay. Got some PPE. But part of it is also, I think, with the removal of masks, people are becoming more self-conscious. Maybe they're seeing themselves more, you know, because the masks could conceal a lot of defects.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, that's definitely happening. There's an article here in Science Daily. Selfies may drive plastic surgery by distorting facial features. You know, it's one of the things that bothers me about selfies is that they distort. And sometimes it's like, take a selfie because you're like at a certain place, you know, and you want it background of whatever, the Eiffel Tower or Mount Rushmore or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you take a selfie and it's like, ugh, you know, especially if you hold the camera too close, because you get a little bit of that fisheye effect.
Yes.
So it exaggerates, like, my nose really isn't that big.
Right.
You know?
Certain aspects widen on the lens.
And then, you know, you've got more high-definition TV, and you have more high-definition devices, you know, more pixels. And so they're less forgiving in terms of the images that they render. And I think more and more people are on Zoom calls. And I find it very distracting on a Zoom call to see myself.
Yeah, I do too.
Because I keep looking at myself. Do I look cool or like, you know, you know, how's my lighting?
You're a little self-conscious.
It's like,
do I look okay like this?
It's like, does this lighting make me look old?
Right.
So I think that's part of what's driving it. What they say here is cell phones, selfies distort facial features, an effect that may be driving an uptick in requests for plastic surgery. And especially among young people who live and die for, you know, TikTok and Instagram, and they're taking a lot of pictures of themselves. They don't like their noses. They don't like their ears, you know, et cetera. And so they want to get it fixed. Selfies showed significant distortions. They actually did an analysis of this. On average, the nose appeared 6.4% longer on 12-inch selfies and 4.3% longer on 18-inch selfies. So keep that in mind.
Pinocchio nose on selfies.
Exactly.
Oh, my.
There was also a 12% decrease in the length of the chin. So it actually makes your chin look receding, which makes you look kind of Neanderthal.
Totally.
Quite a distortion. 12% on a 12-inch selfie. And there was a substantial 17% increase in the ratio of nose to chin length. So you have bigger nose and smaller chin. So I don't feel so bad now with these lousy pictures, now that I know what's really going on here. This was in, by the way, in a plastic surgery journal, plastic and reconstructive surgery journal for, I guess it was February 2022.
Oh, talk about a demographic for plastic surgery.
But it is driving, I think good plastic surgery, conservatively done, can be really enhance a person's self-image.
Absolutely.
But I have to say, I've seen some people, like in a market or a drugstore or something, and I turn the corner and suddenly I'm face to face with what is a very synthetic face, and it's completely featureless. It features kind of that duck lip thing, that upturned lip thing. Uh-huh. And very bobbed nose kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's such a tell that they've had plastic surgery of a very generic kind.
I see some features in women who have had plastic surgery of them looking the same. Mm-hmm. Like the lips were filled the same way. Something about the eyes, something about... I'm like, why did you make everybody look alike?
Right. It's
almost
exactly. There's an ideal. And then, it's in the eye of the plastic surgeon in a way to create the aesthetic. And if that's the predominant aesthetic, they're going to basically stamp all the features that way.
Yeah. But not the unique. I want to say it takes away the self.
But the character.
Because now everybody's lips are the same who had this procedure. It's like, you could tell. Just by looking, you've had work done.
But I wonder if it's at the instigation of the patient sometimes is that drives, successive attempts at plastic surgery, which ultimately eradicates your features.
Yeah. I mean, there are people that go in and get Botox regularly.
Yeah.
Because it only lasts so long, just not to have.
Right. But at least that's reversible.
But it is reversible, and it's not very extreme or anything like that. But,
I'm not averse to it.
I'm not either.
I think that, especially with people with health problems or, as a way to, they want to lose weight, maybe it's best to undertake a health program and then get the plastic surgery because it's more likely to succeed, less complications, better healing, to take nutritional supplements, reduce inflammation and so on and so on. Mm-hmm.
I know people who have greatly benefited from plastic surgery in terms of how they feel about themselves. I'm all for that. All for that as long as they're not hurting themselves.
Right. It's just that, be a little cautious.
Yes.
And, then there's a form of this, kind of the Michael Jackson syndrome is a form of BDD, body dysmorphic disorder, where it never is right. It's never good enough.
So get more,
Yeah. And I actually, I knew, I had a family member who was a plastic surgeon, he was a young plastic surgeon, and he was like the assistant to the really top Hollywood plastic surgeon. He was kind of like doing his apprenticeship with a top Hollywood plastic surgeon.
Wow.
And he said, he would go to the stars' homes. He would do house calls and do a little procedure, a little nip and tuck kind of mild, like a little Botox injection.
There was a series
injection.
Called Nip and Tuck.
Oh, yeah. That was a big series.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It was about the guys who originated plastic surgery back in Texas, but the... He said that he would before a big event like the Oscars or something, he would be very busy because he'd have to make house calls. He'd drive to these, they'd open their electronic gates and let him in, and then he would do a little procedure on them to touch them up before.
Touch them up.
Yeah.
I think it's a regular thing among Hollywood stars, especially women, to touch them up before the aging happens, so to speak. They're getting ahead of, it's almost like aging prevention to some degree.
Yeah, but it creates lines,
whether it's brown spots.
It creates a mono look. There's sort of a mono look, where it's very same. Okay. Yeah. I was just commenting on a medical trend. When it comes to plastic surgery, we also tell people to take things like high dose Wobenzyme.
Yes.
Which is anti-inflammatory, but also has a sort of an anti-swelling effect. The bioflavonoids in there
helps with any scar tissue to prevent
some,
any scar
some
tissue.
Cosmetic plastic and cosmetic surgeons are attuned to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
So, on to questions.
Yes.
We have one from Valerie. I've been using glucosamine chondroitin, and you had a researcher on your program that said it was important to take an absorbable brand, and the recommendation was
Dr. Dr. Neil Levin.
Oh, okay. Neil Levin of Protocol for Life.
Balance.
Balance. Mm-hmm. Right. So I've been using it for decades, but now I find out that Doctor's Best, they had a class action lawsuit against them. It was settled. They were mislabeling their product as containing glucosamine sulfate when it actually contained glucosamine hydrochloride and potassium sulfate. I have two questions. Can you recommend an alternative? And number two, are either glucosamine hydrochloride or potassium sulfate bad for you?
Well, I don't think they're bad. I think it's just that based on efficacy studies, mm-hmm. which I think are fairly recent, because they basically said, you know, when I first got into this, which was in the 1990s, Jason Theodosakis wrote a book called The Arthritis Cure, where he highlighted glucosamine. And so that's launched the glucosamine revolution. A lot of people got into glucosamine. We basically thought that glucosamine sulfate and glucosamine hydrochloride were fungible, were interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that I don't even know the difference in the sourcing, but I believe that the hydrochloride may be derived from shellfish and the sulfate may be derived from bovine sources.
Okay.
But, which may be a kosher consideration, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the hydrochloride material is cheaper, so maybe that was a rationale for using that in the Doctor's Best product. And I think that they got wrapped not on toxicity, but on a false claim,
a claim
that it was...
It contained this when it contained that.
And that, in addition, the ingredient which it contained was, according to studies, less efficacious than...
So glucosamine hydrochloride being less efficacious.
And glucosamine sulfate,
yeah.
But, you know, look, I'm also not happy about lawsuits like that because, you know, it multi-million dollar settlement so that the hundreds of thousands of customers, they each get like, you know, $7, a check for $7.29. And the attorneys get a third of the multi-million dollar settlement.
Yeah.
So to the consumer, maybe they get a refund or something on, you know, a bottle that they bought. But it's just... it's a huge boon for the attorneys. And these class action suits, I guess their way of kind of keeping supplement companies and other companies honest, but in terms of the actual impact on consumers who've been hoodwinked, not a big thing.
Yeah. So Valerie, not to worry, you can... Oh, and would you recommend an alternative for the glucosamine chondroitin? We know that Protocol for Life Balance is
pretty good.
It's on full script as well.
Glucosamine chondroitin. Mm-hmm. There's some evidence that chondroitin works alone, but there's some evidence that it should be teamed with glucosamine.
Yeah.
And there's also a little bit of evidence that glucosamine... may have some anti-wrinkle effects, which makes sense because it is a building block for collagen.
Okay.
And so it's thought that, you know, it may help the supporting structure of the face, you know, while we're talking about plastic surgery.
And then there are formulations not just with glucosamine chondroitin, but also containing MSM, which is also...
Which is a synergist. And then there's other constituents like UC2 and, you know, which has an anti-arthritis effect potentially. And then there's the whole issue of collagen. Well, collagen alone, certain types of collagen, because glucosamine and chondroitin are sort of molecules that are building blocks for collagen, but they're not collagen.
Yeah.
And certain types of collagen maybe fed into the system will have a good effect.
Yeah.
But that, you know, we discussed it with Neil Levin. And, you know, I think he had a pretty good sense, that company, Protocol for Life Balance, has a pretty good sense of which types of collagen are most efficacious.
Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff.
Good point at which to pause because we want to allow one of our sponsors this brief opportunity to share a message with you. So here it goes. Magnesium plays a critical role in vital bodily functions, including energy production, heart health, immunity, and more restful sleep. Magnesium is ubiquitous in metabolic pathways that affect virtually all organ systems. But magnesium deficiency or insufficiency is one of the most pervasive nutritional problems afflicting the majority of Americans. Ultra-processed foods, many common medications, stress, and medical conditions like diabetes all deplete magnesium. So I'm excited to tell you about MagSRT from Jigsaw Health. MagSRT has rightfully earned a reputation as the most popular, most bioavailable, and best-tolerated magnesium brands in the world. The developers of MagSRT have solved a problem that deters many from getting adequate intake of elemental magnesium. Their unique formulation is gentle on the stomach and doesn't produce unwanted GI effects. For more information and to order MagSRT, just go to JigsawHealth.com. That's JigsawHealth.com. Use coupon code HOCKMAN10 for $10 off your order. That's JigsawHealth.com and use code HOCKMAN10 for MagSRT, time-released magnesium. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They, of course, are what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you through their underwriting. And now back to our questions.
We've got one from Fran. She wants to know, what do you think of ZipSlim? My husband is considering taking ZipSlim packets of powder to help him lose weight. It's supposed to speed up his metabolism. Now, she sent us a photo of this, which is kind of distorted, but I was able to read much of it. One type of packet includes caffeine and the other is caffeine-free. There are quite large amounts of some vitamins and minerals. What are your thoughts? The theory is that the combination of supplements will indeed cause weight loss. My husband is 73 years old, has several cardiac stents, has an enlarged prostate. Should we be concerned about him taking this product?
Well, you should be concerned from the standpoint that it lacks efficacy.
Yeah.
Because there really is not, you can't supplement your way to weight loss.
No, you can't.
I refuse to endorse supplements that promote weight loss because the science isn't there. There's a little bit of a science on, you know, caffeine, but then caffeine has other deleterious effects.
True.
So it may somewhat speed the metabolism, but I wish I had a buck for everyone who's obese, who drinks a lot of coffee. There's some evidence on green tea, EGCG, which I don't even think is an ingredient in this, is it?
I don't think EGCG is here, but it does have your basic vitamins. It's got some chromium, some milk thistle, quercetin.
None of those things really are reputed to cause weight loss.
They're not.
Although chromium,
ginger.
Chromium and alpha lipoic acid may have some anti-diabetic effects.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean you'll lose weight while taking.
Oh, you know what's interesting? When you look at the section where it says other ingredients, the first ingredient is organic cane sugar.
Interesting.
Well, that will keep you from losing weight.
Yeah, that's probably not a great idea.
No, it's not a great idea.
I mean, I think the best aspect of it is the name. What is it called?
It's called ZipSlim.
There you go.
I imagine a zipper.
Right.
Slim, like fitting into those jeans you couldn't fit into or something like. Delicious tasting blackberry lemonade. Blackberry lemonade sounds delicious, but yeah. There is no magic bullet, Fran. If there was, we'd be promoting it.
Right.
If it were so.
Yeah, I think it's False gold.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your very thoughtful question. This comes from Tom. Good evening, Dr. Hoffman. Well, it's not from Tom because Tom is a 54-year-old woman, unless her name is Tom. And unfortunately,
like a boy named Sue, a girl named Tom.
Maybe. And unfortunately, despite being on a strict diet and supplements for the past 4 months, my cholesterol is 300 and growing instead of going down. My neuropathic doctor.
Naturopathic.
Naturopathic doctor suggested drugs lowering cholesterol at this point. I like to stay away from them and try to find out why this happens. Is there anything else that I could do?
I think, first of all, it's kind of curious that a naturopathic doctor would say, gee, I can't do anything about lowering your cholesterol anymore. Yeah. Now you should take drugs.
Not a great naturopath.
No, because, even if he can't, and even if natural things won't lower the cholesterol.
Yeah.
It's not always important to lower cholesterol, even of 300.
Right.
Which sounds like, oh my goodness, you know, pull the ripcord. But in this person, we don't know all the other factors that build up to her cardiovascular risk. And we don't have as I so often mention, an EBT heart scan to see if she has any buildup of calcium whatsoever in her coronary arteries.
Right.
And if she doesn't, then she, like many women as they age, they have high cholesterol, but they also have high protective HDL.
Yes.
And it's actually past the age of 70, the higher your cholesterol, the longer you're going to live, especially as a woman.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Okay. So show me a woman with a cholesterol. Show me a woman. I got scrapbooks of these women. I just keep turning the pages. Cholesterol 305.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I don't want to get a Mitt Romney thing.
A scrapbooks of women? A binder of women.
A binder. Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. No, but we see so many, don't we see women who, yeah, many of whom have, and they're the same apprehension is like, oh my goodness, the doctor wants to put me on a statin. You know, do you think what can I take naturally to lower my cholesterol? First question is, do you need to lower your cholesterol?
Right.
And we have seen some people like, oh, the cholesterol's high. Even with a high HDL, we saw a person the other, I guess, woman or man, somebody last week, was it, who had a high HDL and a high cholesterol, but also had multiple sclerosis, the person.
She
had plaque.
Right.
And so it was a bit of a concern, you know, that was consequential, that cholesterol was consequential. So you don't always know, even with a high HDL, that it's protective.
Right.
So, but by means of an EBT heart scan, we determined that she might have some risk. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then it makes more sense to use things like bergamot and or reduced rice or a prescription medication. Mm-hmm. You know, even if the naturopath, reduced rice works pretty well to lower cholesterol generally.
Mm-hmm. That still has some statin in it.
But it's statin-like. I'm not a big fan, because once you decide you want to lower cholesterol, do you want to do it from the health food store or you want to do it from the drugstore?
The other important thing to look at is particle size. We have a number of 300, but we don't know anything about that 300.
Right.
And is the LDL cholesterol, is it a small, dense pattern B? Is it a big, fluffy pattern A, which is desirable? You have to look at all of that.
LP little a. Where I get a little more aggressive in lowering cholesterol, because that's a risk factor that is kind of immutable. It doesn't change that easily with lifestyle or diet or supplements.
Yeah. There has been some research, but little impact from vitamin C or stearic acid.
Niacin.
Which is a type of saturated
fat. Niacin will lower it, but then niacin has not been proven helpful in reducing cardiovascular risk. Yeah. It will lower cholesterol, but the end point is, do people have less need for stents? Do they have heart attacks?
I'm also bothered by everybody being concerned about their cholesterol, but nobody discusses triglycerides.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a much more important number.
Upcoming article next week.
You
stole my thunder.
Oh, no.
That's going to be the next newsletter article.
Fantastic.
Yeah, on triglycerides.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's often either forgotten about, it's like the, you know, what is it, the red-haired stepchild or something.
I did a review of medications that are specifically targeted to lower triglycerides.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of controversy about them, because they will lower your triglycerides.
Yeah.
But they don't reduce cardiovascular risk long-term.
Uh-huh.
So they fix the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, there's an old movie from 1943 with, I think, Errol Flynn. They died with their boots on.
Mm-hmm.
And I paraphrase it, they died with their numbers on. You know, we fixed the blood pressure and the blood sugar, and we fixed the cholesterol. And then at the end, you're still dead.
They add all those numbers, but they're still dead. Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so triglycerides, lipoprotein little a, lowering any inflammation.
And how often do we do a second opinion for a person like that in the practice?
Often.
All the time. You know,
all the time.
Two, three times a month. Maybe.
Absolutely. Yeah. They'll come in, my doc, help.
Yeah.
My doctor wants to put me on a statin.
Mm-hmm.
Help. I don't want to go on a statin.
Mm-hmm. I feel like kind of King Solomon sitting there. Like, I'm the judge of last resort, you know, the Supreme Court justice to make that determination. Yeah. But I have to say, sometimes I say, look, I'm sorry. I think you really need the protection. We need to lower your cholesterol.
But now, what do we do in the case of somebody who's really intolerant of statins? Like, they can't walk up the stairs. What do we do?
And that happened with that person with the high cholesterol.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to work on all the methods to lower cardiovascular risk, short of artificially lowering cholesterol. So,
yes.
Need fish oil. need CoQ10, mm-hmm. need magnesium,
yes.
need anti-inflammatory stuff like
curcumin.
Perhaps resveratrol is, you know,
yes.
some evidence that that may, vitamin K2,
vitamins.
A chiolic aged garlic extract.
Yes.
So we said, look, even if I gave her red yeast rice, it's statin-like, mm-hmm. chances are she would have some of those side effects. So she tried five different statin drugs.
Yeah.
And they just knocked her out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crestor is a statin too,
yeah,
right?
Sure. Yeah.
It is, yeah, right? Yeah. Is that the most tolerated statin though for some
it can
reason
be,
or not?
It can be dosed really low.
Yeah.
As 5 milligram. Yeah.
5 milligram
right.
or something like that. Okay. Okay. So best of luck to you, Tom. Wow. All right. We've got an email here from Tal. Will you comment on the JAMA Network published study of March 25th, which found that any level of alcohol consumption increased risk of cardiovascular issues? Yes.
That's a good preview of what we'll talk about in part two, because
yes.
we're running a little short on time for this mm-hmm. segment. In part two, we'll take up that question, alcohol, yay or nay for cardiovascular protection. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin, because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And you can get into Q&A with Layla. Come directly into the doctor's office with your question by emailing it to questions@drhoffman.net. We'll be happy to address your question as soon as we get it.